Good morning, Associate Professor Peter White, Convener of the CCEN, the Climate Change Education Network. Thanks very much for joining me this morning, Peter. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks very much, Sandra. Lovely to be here.
So, before we talk about the CCEN, tell me about yourself. Who are you?
Thanks, Sandra. Oh, what a question for a morning such as today. Currently I'm an academic working at Deakin University. I've been there for about 10 years, where I joined a team of science educators who were really passionate about what they do, very engaged in some big research projects, and very capable at creating spaces and places for people to find their passion and then ignite, engage, and have some fun with it, really. So I am in a role where I can design my own research projects, where I'm working with teachers, where I'm able to take up space to attend to climate change education in important ways, given our current climate crisis, and focusing on biodiversity loss and lots of the other crises that I believe are social and ecological in their genesis. So, forefronting here that we are experiencing human-induced climate change. So I'm in a position at Deakin where I can take up exploration of that, investigate it, consider it, research it, but in ways where I'm actively participating in learning about it and learning how to attend to these crises with educators and through education. To get to that place, I did a PhD in Canada. My PhD took me 8 long years. And that was mostly because it was a very embodied research practice. I used self-study and autoethnography to explore how I could live sustainably in our very Western society. I paid attention to the ecological footprint and used that as a guide on the side, an encourager for ways that I might reconsider my living practices. And I went through 8 years of learning, excuse me, to do things a little bit differently. So, giving up a car to transport myself personally around the city I lived in, to rethink air transport and to make commitments to only travel on a reduced agenda, reduced to how most academics were doing things at that time. But also reduced because I was transposed or living away from my family. And while I might wanted to have come home every year, I made the commitment to not do that. And I came home every second year. But even that disruption to what I had would prefer to do was a really useful point of reflection. And so I gave myself these challenges, exploring all aspects of the footprint, which might have included energy consumption, clothing sourcing. It really came down for me to have a decision-making process. So I spent some time thinking about what would that look like. In the end, I decided that every decision I made every day had a consequence, and the consequence was often offset by the environment, as opposed to an economic decision for me or a more difficulty, time, resource commitment on my part. And that was the way that in Western society, where we're choosing to make our decisions. If it's cheaper for me, if it's easier for me, then it's okay to do it. So I wanted to flip the tables on that and prioritize the environmental impacts of my decision making. And so I decided to give myself a time period to research as much as I could, because it became never ending. There was always more I could know about the environmental impacts of my decisions. So I had to then give myself a time limit to consider, all right, in the next 3 hours, I'm going to invest, that's probably excessive. In the next hour, I'm going to invest time in making a decision about how I'm going to source sheets for this new living situation I've created for myself. And so I would do all the research with a timer on, and then I would continue to reconsider that decision until my hour is up, and then I would have to make an on-balance judgment. So it was good practice to research, to inform myself, but then to use that research to come to a consensus decision, consensus for myself, like to pull all the parts of my thinking together.
You know, that's a wonderful way for me to lead into the next question. What I'm really wanting to know, having heard that fabulous story, is what is the link between that and climate change education? What is climate change education? So you've spoken in depth about climate change learning. What is climate change education of others, and why is it so important?
Thanks, Sandra. I think that maybe I'll just continue with that story a little bit, because I wanted to say the reason I did all that work with myself and in autoethnography, focusing and reflecting on my own practice in my Western culture, was because I was an educator. I have been an educator my whole life. I started out with science. Actually, I probably started out with horse riding and then went to swimming and then ended up as a science teacher. And so I really value education, and I value my role in it as someone who sees a responsibility in educating others. And so I was able to use my experience at the University of Regina in Saskatchewan, Canada, there as a PhD student, but also working as a sessional academic or a casual academic. And I took on this class called Environmental Education, and I was able to design and craft it to be exactly what I needed it to be. And I used my PhD research, my autoethnography, to inform my own practices. And the second part of my PhD was to explore, through self-study methodology, how I use those practices as a position to teach from. And so I worked with several groups of critical friends to consider the environmentalism, the teacher education aspects, and then my personal commitments to education and how they might constrain or position how I want to be as an educator. And so through those different lenses, I was able to consider or reconsider my practices as an educator. And I think it's that positioning of being an educator that kind of shifts things. So while I believe everybody should consider their ecological footprint and their environmental impact in decision making, every decision, I also think that as an educator, I carry an extra piece of responsibility to think through, how do I model for my students? How do I give myself experiences to then be able to provide example in my opportunities as an educator? And how do I design resources to support other educators to do this work around the climate crisis? And so to come back to your question, which is really important, what is climate change education, and how do I think I'm doing it? I think climate change education is different from sustainability education. I think that could be quite different from environmental education. So environmental education started out in the 60s. It was typically around point source pollution, or it might have been more of a conservation education, which, you know, we have such a wonderful literature of people hanging out in the environment and connecting with it. So there was lots of education around how important those practices are. So whatever the genesis of environmental education, it was about forming a connection, learning how to understand and work within our ecosystems as part of systems, as opposed to this dominating force sitting above it and seeing the environment as our resource base. So that shift for me was really important, to move from an environmental and sustainability education practice into thinking about climate change education. So what is climate change education? I'm still getting there to answer your question. With the focus probably in, you know, about 2010, I think for us as kind of everyday educators, the climate impacts became really in our face, and the need for paying attention to those in our education practices started ramping up. And so I then saw a shift in what I felt compelled to do as an educator, away from creating these opportunities to consider my practices as an individual and as a collective to increase sustainability, to decrease my impact on the environment. I needed to shift then to understand more about climate science, to work through misinformation, to, I suppose, develop argument for climate deniers. Fortunately, I feel now that we've moved on from needing to attend to a binary conversation. I think we're now more accepting of our climate impacts because I think they're more in our face and more of us are experiencing climate impacts on a daily basis. So with that shift to our reality, there's more preparedness to listen and hear about human-induced climate change with the understanding that we're all experiencing guilt and shame, disappointment, frustration, and possibly anger. Even I think it's important to acknowledge anxiety and stress about the situation we find ourselves in. So as an educator, I now need to attend to all of these really big emotions, as well as some really hefty science. And so giving myself time to understand the climate science, to listen to my scientists, to value their interpretation of some hardcore science into what it means to me as an individual in my community and how I can work with my community through my own practices, but also my collective practices to bring about and generate change in our societies and with our environment's forefront of mind. So climate change education is a shift from where we've been in environmental and sustainability education. It comes with a requirement to pay attention to the climate science, to pay attention to understanding accuracy and reliability of information, so dealing with misinformation, to valuing our scientists in our community as those who do the work to help us understand the implications and the costs of our behaviours and our practices. And as an educator, to use all of that to help others come to a space where they too can hear the science and understand the social impacts and the social changes that are required to reduce the environmental impact of our everyday decisions. How's that?
Yeah, that's a really good answer. Thanks very much, Peter. I really appreciate it. So back to the CCEN, the Climate Change Education Network. First of all, what is it? And why did you start it, or why were you in the founding group that got it off the ground?
Thanks, Sandra. So the Climate Change Education Network really came out of work we were doing in 2019 when we were working in various collectives with people mostly across Victoria who are engaged in this space, who see real value in educating about our current crises and finding ways to support young people and teachers to work out how we move forward together. And through these multiple conversations, it became really clear that as academics in this space, we were thinking about similar things, and we knew from our expertise in other places that working as a collective would be much more enjoyable, would bring us some relief and pay attention to the anxieties and the stresses we were feeling, but it would also bring a collective action that was bigger than what we could do and achieve as individuals. And then the summer of bushfires happened in 2019, 2020, and there was an immediate response across Victoria to have gatherings that would discuss the implications of bushfires and turn the conversation more towards this as climate impact. And that was a really generative time for a lot of people across our society to realise that the significance of the bushfires was, of course, devastating, but also this is climate change. This is what impacts look like in our world. And a lot of people in Victoria were touched firsthand by the bushfires. So there became this openness to that kind of conversation. But in those gatherings, they were typically being led through panel conversations with people who were not engaged in education, not community education and not school-based education. We seemed to be being left out of the discussion. And so that was a point that we decided we needed to do something for ourselves to be able to be involved in discussion. And then COVID hit. So early 2020, COVID came, and we had already had a meeting or two of the Climate Change Education Network. There were a number of us who felt that this was an important space. But in those early days of COVID, where in Victoria we went into lockdown and experienced severe isolation, often workplace traumas around that isolation, as well as personal difficulty and mental health challenges around isolation. So then CCEN became this really great family place, this place of support, this place of engagement, this place of collegial interaction, where we could bring our professional concerns and practices, but also be in community with people who thought similarly. And conferencing was very difficult during that time. Offering professional learning was very difficult. So as a collective, we developed our skills in online performance, and I mean performance. We also expressed ourselves very creatively by finding ways to engage our audiences at conferences and in teacher professional development in on country, out of doors experiences that used creativity to provide opportunities to connect with environment, but also to connect with each other about environmental challenges. So clearly we were feeling climate impact still through the 2020s, the information, the results, the consequences of the bushfires were becoming realized. And it was a very emotional time. And really, I think CCEN grew and bloomed out of that. We have a very strong core, but we also have some really important practice philosophies, I guess, around what we do in CCEN. So we're a network of people who have similar beliefs and ideas, but we're loose. So we have a regular meeting, and if you can get there, you get there. Otherwise, it's acknowledged that you're still part of our group. We value you. We value your input through our online agenda and minutes. We have a website, climatechangeeducation.net.au. We use that as an opportunity to showcase resources to support educators working in this space, as well as to showcase some of the work that we've done as a collective. So it's become this really nice practice around being in community, pivoting around meetings and some online activity. But we do things like academically write together. We write for professional audiences as well. We host professional learning. We're often invited to provide information about how organizations might access climate change education. And rather than do that work ourselves, we try and connect them with local people who have the expertise, and perhaps we can provide some resources, as in education materials, to support that that education. So we're not about coming up with more work for ourselves, but we are about connecting people to be able to do the work they see a need for in a great way. And I'll say, in the last year or two, since lockdown has ceased in Melbourne, we have not changed our meeting practices. We still meet online. We still meet regularly, although less regularly. We're now monthly meeting. And we've now, through interest from colleagues across Australia and beyond, broadened out to be much more than just a Victorian network. We really wanted initially, I think, to be Victorian because it was safe. We were all experiencing similar lockdown outcomes. But now there's no need to stay just us. We're really happy to be broader. We are, however, quite focused on our academic practices. And so our group is made up of academics, not all education academics, so more broadly, of course, but certainly all focused on climate change education.
Thanks for that, Peter. That's a great answer. What I'm really interested in is the so what question. And I'd love you to bring what you've just said together, because how does CCEN, or how can it make a difference out there? That's the big so what question. Why have it? I mean, it's nice to nurture each other. How can CCEN make a difference? Just bring together what you've said for us.
That's a good question, Sandra. And I just want to start by saying the collegiality that we experience in CCEN is very important. So I think that, for a start, is something that we value and work to maintain. So you know, the importance of finding connections with colleagues who are working in similar spaces is important emotionally, of course, but also because sparks fly. And so often in our meetings, people will bring things that they've got going on or a call for papers that they've heard about, and we'll talk about it. And we'll talk about, you know, what might be able to be submitted, and possibly a couple of our network might go off and actually work on something together. So it's a working space for ideas. It's often a testing ground for ideas. We are getting in an increasing number of approaches from people to, as I said before, have us support them in climate change education. So often we, in our meetings, discuss those opportunities and try and explore and unpack how we might be supportive. So yeah, I think it's about finding ways to focus in on what is climate change education and what do we as academics want to do about it, as individuals, but also through a collective where we've got increased capacity to think through the possibilities. It's a very creative space. It's a really, like, obviously collegial and supportive, but also creative. So we use our academic skills, be it in presentation or writing for particular audiences. So we use those skills really easily. It might also be us contributing to a political call for investigation. Like Western Australia recently had a call out for a parliamentary inquiry into climate change education in schools. Will CCEN put forward some suggestions for their inquiry? So we will be responsive to invitations to attend to opportunities, but we're also generating our own opportunities about outcomes and ways that we can share our experiences and build experiences as a collective.
Thanks very much, Peter. The CCEN, you're convincing me that the CCEN has huge potential. What are your dreams for it? What direction would you wish it to go in the future?
Well, I think it's important that as current convener, my dreams stay fluid and loose. It's already grown beyond what I imagined it would be. And certainly initially it was important for us through lockdown to have each other. And then since then, as climate change really has come onto everyone's radar, for us to have a collective to work together to think about how do we manifest opportunities for others to see the urgency and the importance of this work and the relevance of this work. And so if we can provide support to our network colleagues in any way, then I think that's great. If we can be that person at the end of an email, I've got to do something around the climate crisis, I don't know what to do. If we can offer resources through our website or a response via email or an interview with a year 12 girl who's got an assignment due on Wednesday and she wants to understand what climate change education is and what her role in it is, then yeah, let's be that group of people who can be responsive, who can explore those ideas fluidly and flexibly. But also let's be a solid network for each other to creatively generate ideas around how we might continue to expand and explore our responsibilities as academics in this space.
Thanks so much for that, Peter. Look, in the same direction, I'd like to ask you about the Centre for Regenerating Futures, which I know you've been instrumental in beginning. And of course, this is all in the same direction. Could you tell me about the genesis of that, how that integrates the conversation we've just had about climate change education and more? What is the intention of it?
So the Climate Change Education Network, as I said, started at the end of 2019, became its special little workspace during the pandemic, broadened out to be a national, possibly further network for academics working in this space. So I guess I knew that there was an importance in this space. At Deakin University, we had the opportunity through our School of Education to offer up research groupings. And there were some groupings suggested to us, five in fact, that attended to teacher education in appropriate ways. And I could have found a home in every one of them, but not one of them was at the pointy end of what was going on in the climate crisis. So I worked with some colleagues to offer to our school leaders a sixth option, and that was called Regenerating Education in Uncertain Futures. And this group became a thing last year in 22. We had contracts with organizations to develop learning materials. We had evaluation research come out of that. We held research retreats to embody and explore attuning within a post-human theoretical frame. We really attended to what does it look like to be a researcher in this space. And my colleagues who were working with me are from an arts practice, an arts research background. And so this has been a very generative space, and one that we've been collaborating on, gosh, for 10 years, really, through a similar faculty group previously, where we focused on self-study methodology and our own teaching education practices. So we had some skin in the game and some experiences. We knew that our work would be at least fun and would be productive, but we really paid attention to our processes of building community and being in community. And I think that's the key learning that I took from the work that we've done in CCEN, was the importance of community.
Thanks very much, Peter. I just want to interrupt because you said a word that a lot of listeners on this podcast might not understand, which is post-human futures. Would you just integrate that and then keep going? Thank you.
I think when I'm talking post-human, I'm thinking about positioning humans away from their pinnacle position. So let's understand humans as having a role to play within the ecosystem, not, as I said before, being the, you know, the resource managers or the directors of what happens in our ecosystem spaces. So when I think about attunement and paying attention to, it's about finding ways for us to connect back into our systems ways of thinking, to our ecosystems. So in the practices we enjoyed in Regenerated, our school group, we actually found ways to enable our members to connect with other beings. And so I'm talking about, it might sound like non-human spaces. It doesn't have to be non-human. So it might be kin of all kinds, other animals, other plants. It might be just outdoor spaces. It might be indoor spaces. That positioning of human as not the pinnacle, as not the top, attending to and understanding that we are in this together.
So we're talking about language shift as well here, aren't we? About generating new languages to cope with the need for change that we're talking about and the changes that we're referring to.
Yes, definitely paying attention to language and also paying attention to practice. So the ways that we can, that we want to talk about being in collective, in collaboration, not just with humans, but with our kin, and understanding that that is the spaces, the beings beyond human, plants, animals, et cetera. So I think those kind of practices are becoming better understood more broadly. And we were really interested in working in that space. But then at the end of last year, we had a call from our faculty to redesign the research ecology of our faculty. So we had just done that in our school, but now we had to do it for the faculty. And the faculty decided they only wanted 4 research groups at the school level. And we felt rather than create a lot of angst for our colleagues, we would challenge ourselves to step up to become a faculty research centre. And so we did a lot of work at the end of last year to establish relationships across the other schools of our Faculty of Arts and Education, and also NYKERI, our institute, and to pay attention to how to broaden out the understandings of what it means to work in this space without an education focus. And we found colleagues thinking about this in every school and NYKERI. So we were really pleased to be able to create a new space. And so we're moving forward with the Centre for Regenerating Futures, We have about 45 members, but beyond that, we have a lot of allied members. And so CCEN will forge a very close relationship with the Center for Regenerating Futures as allied, in an allied relationship. And we'll find ways to co-host events, to share ideas, to think about productive outputs that allow us to move the core agenda forward. And the core agenda, of course, is how to attend to living well in a climate crisis, in the climate crisis.
That sounds a wonderful way to draw this to a conclusion, Peter. Thank you very much for that. But what is your key message for the future of CCE, Climate Change Education Network, and climate change education, actually? Answer both of those.
Okay, well, I think for climate change education, the key message for me is to let's listen. Let's listen to our scientists, let's pay attention to misinformation, and let's work together as a collective to find better ways forward. That's going to be uncomfortable. It's going to mean we have to learn to rely on our political decision making and our decision makers, but also they need to step up into the responsibility of making good social decisions that may not have a 3-year term attending to them. So for climate change education, it's very much a let's hold together and work to a better future. There is an imperative to do this work. It's not just a flight of fancy or an academic decision. And I think that imperative will drive us to pay attention well. For Climate Change Education Network, I think our work is to support each other with our multiple specific foci that we bring to this important academic work and to find ways to support each other. So that doesn't mean to need to collaborate on everything together, but just to be supportive. And if that's about holding a space where we can bring ideas and challenges and discuss and explore, then that's important for us to do. But also it's important for us to use our academic roles and responsibilities, such as writing for specific academic calls or for professional magazines, to showcase the ideas that we're coming across about how to attend in a climate crisis. I think it's about being in collaboration, and hence being a network.
Associate Professor Peter White, thanks very much for your time. It's been a wonderful conversation. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandra.